Welcome to another episode of The Brand Called You, a podcast and podcast show that brings you leadership lessons, knowledge, experience, and wisdom from thousands of successful individuals from around the world. I am your host, Ashutosh Garg, and today I'm privileged to welcome a very, very senior professional from the world of books and one of my publishers, Mr. Ananth Padmanabhan. Ananth, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Mr. Garg.
Ananth is the Chief Executive Officer of HarperCollins Publishers India. So, Ananth, before we get into the world of books, I was reading about you, and you had a fascinating journey from the time you were a 17-year-old to the boss of HarperCollins in India. Please share this story with some interesting anecdotes.
Thank you. Yes, I'm privileged to have the kind of life I led, largely thanks to people around me who gave me the little advantage of making the choices that I made and lived with. So just after my 12th standard, it's kind of an unusual story. I've said this before. I didn't clear my maths paper the very first attempt. And I had to do what is called a compartmental exam in the October of that year. So in that period when I was re-preparing, and it's an anecdote that I have to re-quote for in current career, and I'll make that connection later. Is that one of my elder brother's classmates in college suggested, why don't you do a summer job? My father's brother had a lending library. So our house was always full of books.
Okay.
And we were, my brother and I, the three of us, we were taken to the lending library always to kind of borrow at least 5 books a week. So books were part of the life.
Yeah.
My dad was a reader and so on. And then says, why don't you try working in a bookstore? So at 17, I walked into Landmark and said, I'd like a summer job. It was the anecdote is one of the life lessons that I've learned very early. Is that the gentleman who gave me that job, his name is Obaid, who used to manage the store for a very long time until he retired from there, made me come to the interview 4 times.
Wow.
Now, I lived in Kilpok. The store was in Nungambakkam, and I would take a bus. I would walk to the bus stand, take a bus and come. No mobile phones. There was no way of, I would call and ask to check, does the appointment exist? And when I got the job eventually, and I asked him, why did you make me come 4 times? And he said, it was not about whether I desired to give you the job or not. It was a summer job. I wanted to make sure that you wanted to do this.
Okay.
And that you were willing to give it the time and need to do it. And that's what I wanted to check in a teenager. Say, do you have the conviction to, having signed up for this, continue? And I think about that even now. Quite a bit. So walked into the bookstore, great job. And it's one of the things that, really got me into a love for a further books, because at that point, you don't know what a career in publishing means.
Right.
But working on the shop floor, when new books come in, and I was responsible for, the floor. So you come into work every morning, the first 2 hours, you kind of clean up the shelf, rearrange the books, remove the ones that are not moving and so on. And about 11 o'clock from the back office, I also did back office work. Books would come down to the shop floor and you change the displays. I knew about them because a publisher came and said, you have a new Jeffrey Archer this week. And what got me immediately curious was, it was a time before internet, not even mobile phones until 98, 99. Is customers would come that weekend and say, the new Archer here. And I like, I know it. How did you know it? And how did the book make a way from whichever world it was published in to your bedside table or to the store? And I got more and more curious about it. And that 5 years, I used to work 7 hours a day, 12 days a week. Landmark even was open on Sundays.
Wow.
Was a greatest learning from all aspects. Least of all being how to manage a customer. But reading habits, visual merchandising, discoverability.
Right.
What books were so you are curious. And even if you are a regular visitor to your neighborhood bookstore, if the display makes you stop, then I've done part of my job. And if you ask for something and if I know where it is and give it to you in a store, that Landmark was a 10,000 square foot store.
Correct.
For people on the floor to remember where it was, guide you, hand sell, remember your preference. If I would be able to tell you, Mr. Garg, how are you? And I have a new management book because you bought something the last time. I think you might want to see this. Because it was a time where people would call and say, I'm going to send a driver. Can you send 5 or 6 books? And they wouldn't return them too. So I learned a lot, not just about... being in publishing was not just able to read a lot more, which we did, but it's also about getting people to read. Then we did a large Penguin Books exhibition in the store. It was the largest range of Penguin books that people had seen, international range, which resulted in me meeting their CEO and then their then sales director. They asked me, what makes it exciting for you? And I said, just the scale, sheer size and so on. I was hired as their first sales rep. I was responsible for South India sales. Then eventually, as a traveling rep, if I calculated all those miles on trains that I did, I should be a platinum card holder in Indian Railways, as it were.
Yeah.
Take a bag, catalogs, books, walk shop to shop. And those were the days of only independent bookstores. Mm. So my typical calendar would be start traveling in January, go to the Calcutta Book Fair via Hyderabad, finish work in Cal, come to Delhi, come back to Bombay, then to Mangalore, Bangalore, then to Kerala, and then come back to Madras, and then repeat.
Amazing.
It was a real, that's all I did, sell books on the road, pretty much. And as a very large publisher, I was one of the few in the trade in that sense. Then career took over. I joined as a sales rep. I exited as a senior vice president at Penguin. But I knew that that wasn't enough. So I had joined in about 97. And 92 to 97, I spent in Landmark. All my jobs, I started on the 1st of October. So it's going to be 30 years in publishing this October. In 2002, I'd signed up for a publishing course at Stanford because I said, I know about selling books and whatever, and I'd managed to convert some part of passion into a viable model, but I should learn publishing. Penguin were kind enough to let me do that course. So I studied publishing in Stanford, came back. In 2010, after having, I was already vice president at that point, and I knew that this singular, great experience, depth, but very linear. And as the demands of the business changed from retail to understanding internet, even it was pre-Flipkart days. Understanding the needs of the whole business, as it were. I said, I must change my experience level. So I signed up for a senior management course at IIM Ahmedabad. I was the only guy from what is a creative industry. I still remember a conversation about somebody asking me, so how do you price a book? And I knew then that if you can't answer something simply, you don't know the answer correctly, presumably. So I couldn't explain to a room full of techies and others and other people, mostly were CEOs, the tier three group, why we price a book at $299 or $249, because they do in-depth market research, dipstick and God knows what, to price your pack of chips at $49. But I would take a look at a novel, take a really good look at it and say, this is what it's going to do. And maybe get it right 5 out of 10 times, right? We know what the market potential for a book is. But for me to translate that to someone and also to be putting myself in this uncomfortable room where there were people from every other industry, Nokia, Ashok Leyland, you name it, Tally and, God knows so many, 85 of us in the classroom. So just being present in a room where knowledge was flying left, right, and center, and you managed to grab something and putting myself out of that comfort zone, man, I became what I call management ready. At least at that point, I realized what my real strengths were. Very good at maybe one thing, but to understand what it means to do. And it went a long way. It went a long way in, the market changed dramatically. We are talking about small independent bookstores, to chains, to malls, to the advent of, likes of Flipkart, the rise and fall of chain stores, the arrival of Amazon, algorithm, and now social media, and everything that we're seeing now.
Correct.
Book selling has gone through a dramatic phase.
Correct.
Primary of which is to, de-link yourself from the romanticized notion of a book, but also understand it that somebody wrote it. It's for many others to read it. So in that sense, it's a thing that has to be sold, that has to be marketed, that has to be taken.
Well said. Well said.
Creatively as well, I'm a photographer. I've written a novel. So in 2012, I did a photo exhibition. That is something I practice always. I wrote a novel, and I also keep, dabbling in what I call little writing or whatever. So I've managed to hold on to my creative instincts, as it were. And I like to do that. Travel photography and so on. And it's so important to have a really good hobby to go back to, I think, so you don't get disillusioned when if your identity is your career, then a fall can be hard and you tend to lose yourself. But if you know that this is not all I do, and that also means, you have to be happy at what you do in that sense.
Well said. Well said.
And it became very useful. So the jump is obviously then when HarperCollins offered me a job to run the business. It was day zero. All my 24 years of experience didn't mean anything because I'd never been a chief executive.
No.
So being a great sales director has no relationship to the demands of what this business meant. But I have fantastic bosses who kind of held my hand, probably. The thing that HarperCollins was completely different for me was I came from trade publishing. And HarperCollins is also a textbook publisher. And we sell books now in almost 6,700. We're one of the fastest growing education publishers in the planet. The jump I was going to make was one of the things that helped me learn a lot about how education happens and what we need to do to be intuitive and do a lot more besides just curriculum teaching is that when I was 17 or 16, when I was taking my final board exams, if the classroom had had the ability to identify the slow learner and the fast learner, and it was not a one whitewash from the corner of a room to say, okay, let's all solve this trigonometry or algebra, whatever the damn thing is, which none of us use ever. That the things that I couldn't learn conceptually, if the teacher had not reached out to me or had reached out to me, singling me out during the course of the year, and not after I had failed to do what I was meant to do, and then I had to need another 3 months of one-on-one coaching to do it. If that benefit had been existing then, either through technology or through just more intuitive learning and teaching experience, we will not leave slow learners behind.
Absolutely.
Well, and it's one of those things that we use now so that when we assess a child, and I'm sure teachers are already doing it. They're all thinking about it all the time. That, you know, how do you get everybody to learn? How do you understand that everybody does not learn at the same pace? Everybody might not need the intent to learn what you and I want to learn.
Correct.
Might be an engineer and I want to be an artist. So as long as I'm literally, you know, my literacy and numeracy is fine, I don't need to lead the same things that you do. So a lot of our education system has also changed to adopt and identify individual strengths of kids. It's kind of come a full circle.
Oh, no, it's fantastic. And so I'm going to move to your avatar as the CEO of HarperCollins Publishers, which you said is one of the fastest growing publishing companies. Let me start with asking you, and you are an author, you are a publisher, you are a CEO. What makes a good story?
One that can hold my attention. By story, I mean, if you're referring to fiction, but it can also apply to good nonfiction.
Correct.
That it has to be compulsive. It has to hold my attention. I bought the book knowing that, expecting a certain feeling. Entertainment or education. If I'm going to read a new book about the Rajiv Gandhi assassination, we've just done an investigative book, 90 days on the run up to identifying the killer. So I know what I bought. If that story is able to hold me and hold my attention, whatever your interests are, it's a good book.
Fantastic. And, I was talking to some publishers, and I'm sure you face the same. There are so many books that are being written by Indians now that all of you are flooded with the scripts.
Sure.
What do you look for before you decide to publish a new author?
So there are two points to this answer. The first one is that, of course, we have a room full of editors. Editors publish into their respective categories.
Correct.
We have somebody who does narrative nonfiction, business, lifestyle, fiction, children's, and all of that. They have a certain understanding of what people like to read. But if there were a few elements that we think are important for the book to work, for a book to find its place, because like you're saying, everybody can write a book.
Correct.
Some of them should just be an essay. Some of them should be a news story. Some of them can be a Facebook post. Some of them are a tweet. It need not be a book.
Yeah.
But if it's a book, one, compulsive writing, good quality writing, crucial. Within the language you practice it, can be Hindi, can be Telugu, can be English.
Any language, yeah.
It has to be a well-written book, well-conceived, compulsive narrative, appropriate research to the subject that you're writing in, so that we know that there is credibility in the voice. And it has to be, if it's fiction, I must be interested in the characters, their predicament, their lives. If I don't care about the people, it doesn't matter. But if I'm reading about a particular moment in history, I have to care about that moment.
Correct.
Or you have to get the reader to care about that moment. It is like the revival of, you know, not revival. You see the kind of books that are coming up on partition. Partition was, until about 5 years ago, a very North Indian event.
Yes.
Growing up in Madras,
mm-hmm.
I know about partition. Mm-hmm. I've seen the films that came elsewhere. Mm-hmm. I've read about it in my history books. But because I was not part of the moment and my parents were not part of the moment, it was not part of my imagination or my understanding or need to understand.
Mm-hmm.
But now writers have, you know, there are books that I can list out, but
mm-hmm.
book on partition have made a tremendous change in our understanding of that moment in history.
Right.
And that is that the book has done it.
Mm.
And it's so important. So
well said. You also spoke about, you know, the way the entire publishing business has been evolving, you know, bookstores, single bookstores, where you used to go with your bag, getting your diamond card on Indian Railways, to chain stores, to the big stores, and then the almost disappearance of the chain stores.
Sure.
My question to you, Anand, is how is technology changing the world of publishing?
Quick answer first is that now, I mean, we can keep saying pre-COVID, post-COVID for a long time, mm-hmm. but these dramatic shifts have happened. HarperCollins is a 205-year-old company.
Yes.
So one can simply imagine what 200 years of history means to be publishing every day somewhere in the world.
Correct.
We now publish in 18 languages around the world.
Mm-hmm.
So the quickest thing that technology has done is today, and to go back to your own introduction, if 125,000 people are able to see what some of the speakers on your interview have been saying, is that with the aid of technology, we can reach a lot more people a lot faster
mm.
and deliver what they want much better than ever before.
Right.
And there have been every moment in time when technology has been able to do that. So going backwards, we've had now this kind of technology. So if I list out 5 books now, most of your readers or listeners can actually go and order them. And before our show is over, they might get a notification saying your order is on your way.
Mm.
It's fantastic.
I agree.
So digital first has become so important in publishing.
Mm.
Whether it's social media announcing it, that's one part. Bookstores to reach their customers, that's another part. Understanding the customer, understanding likes, beliefs. So if the bookstore that you shop in,
mm.
because you're saying that you have a few hours a day when you keep for yourself,
mm.
if they understood what that meant
mm.
And have asked you that question or just understood intuitively.
Mm.
And if on a Saturday morning around your coffee break time, I send you a simple WhatsApp that says, morning, Asutosh, have you checked out these books
mm.
based on your past likes? You might buy at least one of them.
Absolutely.
And that can happen repetitively to many number of customers. How do you, you know, technology can be used there.
Mm.
And similarly on the making front, obviously the making of the book has changed.
Mm.
Technology on productions have changed.
Mm.
The biggest changes, of course, in the last 15 years are that you can buy an ebook anywhere in the world.
Mm.
You can buy an audio book. Authors can deliver podcasts. Author can deliver pieces on, you know, pieces on Substack and so on. Mm. So it's a highly invasive. But especially because we are also a creative industry.
Mm.
And no offense, I can't sell you a soap beyond a point, right?
Correct. Correct.
You can either have a bath or you can keep it.
Mm.
No offense to the soap, we all use it. But when it comes to a book and the world that our writers create, there is just so many ways in which I can keep you engaged for many hours during the week.
Mm.
And I think embracing technology is very important for success in publishing.
Very well said. My next question to you, Anand, is that, you know, there is a general view that I've been reading and talking to people that the younger generation is reading less. And when I talk to a lot of young people, they seem to be reading just as much, maybe in different formats.
Right.
What is your perspective?
There have been time markers in our... So I'm looking at India as a very young, reluctant reader environment.
Mm-hmm.
About 300 million kids in school.
Mm-hmm.
300 million people speak English almost as a first language.
Mm-hmm.
Sales from our guesstimates, we think about 55 to 60 million people buy books,
mm-hmm.
general books, not books that you're forced to buy.
Yeah.
The bulk of the age group that buys the books are in between the age of, say, 25 and 45.
Mm-hmm.
A majority of them are also women.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I've stopped understanding the idea of what a millennial is. I don't know which year it stopped and which year it started
yes.
or which year Gen Z is.
Yeah.
But in a country like ours, Harry Potter, Jeff Kinney, Sudhamurthy, Ruskin Bond, there have been writers who have changed reading habits in youngsters because you have to catch them young.
Mm-hmm.
So the current generation So Harry Potter was between 97 and say 2007. Mm. 97 pretty much, is, well, exactly 25 years ago.
Right.
So the kids who are 10 there are now 35.
Mm.
Presumably they are even, you know, so they might be buying it for themselves and continue to be very good readers.
Yeah.
They might understand the value of books and therefore their siblings or their children might be reading books and so on. Mm. That created a shift and increase in market.
Mm.
So alongside many books have come, and Chetan Bhagat first published 5.someone.
Mm.
He's singularly responsible for bringing what we call campus novel into the forefront.
Mm.
Pricing it at 99 when average books were 250. He said, no, I need to price it right for college kids to be able to buy it.
Mm.
So books like that have come and gone.
Mm.
There is a book called Subtle Art of Not Giving a Fuck by Mark Manson.
Mm.
It's now sold 650,000 copies. It's the highest selling nonfiction in the last 5 years across every other writer in India.
Yeah.
So are youngsters reading more? Yes. You answered the question partly saying they're not just looking for a print book to be saying this is a reader.
Mm.
That's where technology comes in. If there are enough ways in which you're able to engage with the reader as a publisher, or if the author, you might not even need us. You could very well create a parallel world like the brand called you, or the brand called me, things that you should know in your life. And people might be listening to you talk about it. So you have an ability as a creator to reach as many people. And the idea of the book has gone beyond its physical form.
Correct.
Our demographic suggests that more people are reading. Equally responsible is that we can't be publishing what we think they should be reading. We should also be publishing what they would like to read. And therefore, your catalog should be a reflection of books that can keep their attention, books that can entertain them, books that they need to read and understand. And also understanding trends. So coming out of the pandemic, books on freelancing, gig economy. You don't need a full-time career. How to become an independent entrepreneur. You don't need to start a company. You don't need a startup to leverage your strengths. There's so many things we can create to get them going. So kids are reading more. They're far more smarter. An average five-year-old is a lot smarter than when I was 15. I mean, they know exactly how to use an iPad to watch what they want. And they're playing a lot more complicated games than we ever did. So it's a great time. It's a very good generation. They are reading a lot.
Wonderful. So I have time for two more questions. My next question to you is on ebooks and audiobooks. There seems to be a huge move towards ebooks and audiobooks. How are publishers like HarperCollins taking advantage or not taking advantage of this new medium that seems to have pervaded everyone's little devices?
So here the E and one is publishers are format agnostic. So in the West, in fact, HarperCollins in the UK is one of the publishers to go audio first, as it were.
I see.
What they call total audio. So all our books are available in print, e, and audio. And they've been, so the Kindle is, I think, about 14, 15 years old. In fact, right? So the ebook has existed for a very long time. Obviously, here it was a question of, do you have a device? Are you going to buy the ebook or not? And so on. And market here is under 10% for ebooks. And audio business is growing. And that's what we believe when I say agnostic is if I don't know where you live. I don't know what your reading interests are. I don't know which format you read. I don't know what your price sensitivities and stuff like that are. You might be a reader across genres. If you Googled for a book and if I'm able to give it to you in any of the convenient formats, you might want a hardback, paperback, ebook, audiobook, subscribe to my author's channel, you know, listen to him talking on audio. If I have the video that I create for a children's book, if we are able to create the content that we have across formats in ways that you can access them most conveniently and buy them, you might even want WhatsApp updates on a recipe. You don't even want to buy a book anymore. As long as we are able to do that, great. In numbers, in pure numbers, ebooks are under 10% in India. In the rest of the world, it's like 15%. Audio is a very big segment abroad and it's catching up fast here. I think audio gives the convenience of, you know, singular experience. People are now traveling a lot more. And there is, in a certain generation, both older generation and in the middle generation, which is highly distracted. Because, you know, social media is literally like Vetal sitting on your back.
Correct.
You can't do anything without for a moment checking one of your notifications. And sometimes you repeat it thrice just in case you miss something. In a world like that, I think there is a certain distraction to flipping the page, sitting alone, reading long time through print. Kids can't even write legible handwriting anymore because they need a keypad. Correct. So for that, and in knowing our consumer base, as it were, audio is a fantastic format to keep their attention with the right books. And then there's a lot of innovation. No more is it a one full 13-hour, 14-hour. You can listen to it episodical. You can move to a page if you want. You can come back to where you left off. So it is just the joy of good technology. But as a publisher, we are agnostic. We will make our books available in all three formats.
Fantastic. And Anand, my last question to you, and this is for the many, many people who will listen to our conversation. Based on your incredible journey with books from the time you were a young intern in Nungambakkam in Chennai, and I've been to that store many, many years ago, to where you are today, what would you say are three lessons you would like our viewers and listeners to take away?
Never give up.
Okay.
That's one. Never give up.
Yeah.
What we call fear is sometimes just a fear of embarrassment. Mm-hmm. So never be afraid of being embarrassed.
Okay.
And be kind always.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Anand, on that note, and your amazing three pieces of advice, which you articulated so quickly, never give up, never be afraid of embarrassment, and be kind. Thank you so much for speaking to me. Thank you for talking to me about your incredible journey. I mean, I was just listening to you, completely mesmerized on how you easily were moving from the four interviews that you didn't get till the one that you finally got to your 10,000 store bookstore, to traveling as a sales individual around the whole country, to the management lessons at IIM Ahmedabad, where you spoke of pricing, to leading HarperCollins. I mean, you know, what an amazing journey you've had. And I sincerely hope, other than your novel, one day you will write about your amazing journey for a lot of people. Thank you again for speaking to me, and good luck to you.
Thank you so much for asking. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to The Brand Called You videocast and podcast, a platform that brings you knowledge, experience, and wisdom of hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Do visit our website, www.tbcy.in, to watch and listen to the stories of many more individuals. You can also follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Just search for The Brand Called You.